It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Anti-quarantine protests turn violent in Liberia. The Ebola death toll increases by more than 100 in just 2 days. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. In Liberia, protests against an Ebola quarantine Wednesday turned violent as police fired live rounds into the air and tear gas to disperse stone-throwing demonstrators in the outskirts of the capital, Monrovia. At least 4 people were reported wounded in the melee. VOA's Ann Look reports.
President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf said West Point and Dolo Town, also outside the capital, are now, quote, areas of intensity for Ebola and will be quarantined under full security watch.
This means there will be no movements in and out of those areas.
Effective Wednesday, Liberia is under a nationwide curfew from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. Liberians continue to complain of shortcomings in the government's response. Residents of Monrovia and other affected parts of the country say they are reporting dead bodies to authorities as instructed, but it is still taking days for burial teams to arrive to pick them up. Public health experts tell VOA that poor communication and challenges in the field are heightening public anxiety and risk undercutting confidence in the authorities. Ann Look, VOA News, Dakar.
The death toll from Ebola is rising with the fastest in Liberia, with officially 576 fatalities. The World Health Organization said Wednesday the Ebola outbreak across West Africa has claimed more than 100 additional lives on August 17 and 18, raising the overall death toll to 1,350 since February. The UN agency also reports 221 new cases of the disease, bringing the total number across Liberia, Guinea, Nigeria, and Sierra Leone to just under 2,500. This is VOA News. The WHO also says the countries hardest hit by the outbreak, Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, are beginning to suffer shortages of fuel, food, and other basic supplies after shipping companies and airlines suspended services. The World Food Program has started an emergency aid shipment to quarantine zones where some 1 million people are at risk of those shortages. Nigeria's health minister told VOA his country is stepping up efforts to secure borders by screening travelers who visit. In Sierra Leone, WHO representative Dr. Jacob Mafunda said countries grappling with Ebola should conduct exit screenings.
States with Ebola transmission, like Sierra Leone, should conduct exit screening of all persons at international airports, seaports, and major land crossings for unexplained febrile illnesses consistent with potential Ebola disease.
Meanwhile, fears of an Ebola outbreak have spread to Southeast Asia. Health officials in Myanmar, also known as Burma, have quarantined a 22-year-old man they thought might have the deadly virus. He was returning from Guinea, along with 4 others, and may have also traveled to Liberia. In Vietnam, various news agencies report several Nigerians are being monitored for possible virus infections. The outbreak has created surging interest in developing new drugs and vaccines for the hemorrhagic fever. In London, an emergency call has been issued by the British government and the Wellcome Trust Medical Charity, who pledged nearly $11 million. And epidemiologist Oliver Brady, writing in the journal Nature, calculates 30,000 people may qualify for some sort of medication as drug manufacturers race to produce more experimental medications. A group of Nigerian soldiers say they defied orders to go on an operation against the Islamist group Boko Haram because they were not adequately armed. They say the incident occurred Saturday when soldiers with Nigeria's 21st Armored Brigade were told to advance toward Gwoza and Daiwa, 2 parts of Borno State where the militants have been active. A defense spokesman said he was unaware of the incident and denied reports of a mutiny. Witnesses told the French press agency Wednesday dozens of people have been killed in clashes between rival Arab tribes in Sudan's troubled Darfur region. One witness said at least 30 members of the Rezegyat tribe were killed in fighting with the Malia tribesmen over territorial claims. A Malia witness told AFP at least 40 members of his tribe were also killed. In Libya, Reuters reports clashes between rival militia groups erupted in the North African country's second biggest city, Benghazi, Wednesday, with at least 5 people reported killed. The fighting pits those loyal to former General Khalifa Haftar against Islamist groups such as Ansar al-Sharia. I'm Victor Beatty reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's defense minister says soldiers did not shoot directly at Ebola protesters.
No one, and I repeat, no one was injured by bullet. No one was fired directly. All the firing took place in the air, and that those who were injured as a result of the stampede by trying to break through police lines.
Brownie Samuka is Liberia's defense minister, but a human rights campaigner says security forces shot directly at protesters. Cameroon closes all its borders with Nigeria to protect against Ebola. We look at the role of African media in educating the public about Ebola, and a Somalia refugee conference appeals for international support.
This conference was seeking a commitment from asylum hosting countries, countries of Kenya, Uganda, Eritrea, Djibouti, and Yemen, who hosted the highest number of refugees from Somalia.
Abdoulaye Gourda Barre is Somalia's Interior and Federal Affairs Minister, and a look at how green loans are helping Kenyan farmers. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's defense minister says members of the armed forces did not shoot directly at residents of West Point, a densely populated slum of the capital, Monrovia. Instead, Brownie Samuka says a large crowd of residents, mostly youth, on Wednesday attacked soldiers who were deployed in the township to enforce Ebola quarantine and rescue the female district commissioner of the area, Aisha Flowers, who had been held hostage by residents. He said the soldiers fired in the air to disperse a large crowd. Defense Minister Samukai tells me three persons were wounded, not from bullets, but when they tried to cross over a barbed wire security barricade.
The EFO was deployed to support the containment and quarantine manual facilities in West Point, indicated by health workers. This morning, upon instituting those measures, a group of unruly residents came and began to attack police personnel and military security personnel on the post, throwing missiles, sticks, rocks, anything they could find, a hammer, on feces, anything of that nature. And they went on to attack the residents and safety of the district commissioner, a female commissioner. And so we had to go in to rescue the female commissioner, and there was an attempt by a very large, I'm talking about 200 to 300 angry youth, to overrun the position of security people right at the road. It was within the context of that, and given the nature of the crowd, that shots were fired in the air, I repeat, in the air, to disperse the crowd. Eventually, the district commissioner was saved, a family was saved, the situation was brought under control. There were three individuals who were wounded who had gone to cross over the barbed wire that was laying across as a barrier preventing individuals to cross the security line, and they got wounded on their leg, and one of their legs got seriously fractured.
So once again, Mr. Defense Minister, you are saying that the soldiers did not shoot to kill?
No. The fire in the air, no one, and I repeat, no one was injured by a bullet. No one was fired directly. All the firing took place in the air, and that those who were injured as a result of the stampede by trying to break through police lines. They had a barbed wire, and we set the barbed wire, and people who tried to force their way to the barbed wire injured their legs.
The complaint I got from some people is that West Point is overcrowded. Why the siege? Why are the people not allowed to be able to move around?
Well, the key issue is that there is a deadly outbreak of the virus in a very close-knitted, congested community. We have to find a way to provide health care for those individuals. We have to find a way to conduct surveillance. We have to find a way to make sure that those individuals can get the proper treatment that they need. We have to find a way to cut the spread of the virus. And the way to cut the spread of the virus is to make sure that we are positioned in a way that we can be able to identify those who have the sickness and at the same time identify those who need assistance. And that is why the government took the actions.
You know, I had a chance to speak with the Minister of Information, and I brought up the issue of the economic impact of all the measures that have been taken, let alone Ebola itself. The situation is that West Point people are not being allowed to get food. So would the government be willing to, say, drop food or bring food to the people there?
The answer to that question is that indeed the government is taking measures to make sure that food is made available for the most vulnerable group. For those that have been identified in isolation, food will be made available. What the government intends to do is to find a mechanism through the marketing leadership of the women and those marketeers in the Western sector to provide some kind of subsidy to reduce the increasing price of rice that is taking place at this point in time. And then thirdly, those that have been identified as vulnerable persons in the health center will therefore be given free food.
Liberia's Defense Minister Brownie Samukai was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Vandalak Patrick, National Director of Liberia Campaigners for Change, a human rights organization, says soldiers fired live bullets at protesters, wounding several people.
Let me tell you, Mr. Botti, the only thing this Liberian Defense Minister can tell the war and the Liberian people, if he tell the entire world that he was born by a woman, there will be no reason for us to doubt. I'm telling you, live bullets were used. A 15-year-old boy by the name of Sylvester Kumar was shot in the leg by the Liberian Army, the AFL, when he went to go rescue one of his family members who also received a bullet in the process. His leg was shot by the AFL soldier. The police were there, but they were very professional. This is an army that the American government spent millions of dollars to train. And to have a defense minister coming out to tell us that they were shooting in the air, this is unfortunate. I think this is an act of atrocity being committed against peaceful civilians. These were armed civilians that were protesting that they wanted food, they wanted medical supply to be treated.
Vandalak Patrick is National Director of Liberia Campaigners for Change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Cameroon's information minister says it is unlikely that the country's decision to close its borders with neighboring Nigeria due to the ongoing Ebola crisis will undermine warm diplomatic relations between Yaounde and Abuja. Issa Chiroma says that Cameroon had no choice but to close the borders. There have been 12 confirmed Ebola cases in Nigeria, with at least 4 deaths. Chiroma tells reporter Peter Clarty that Cameroon's decision to close its borders with Nigeria is intended to protect citizens from the deadly Ebola disease.
Well, the government found itself in the need of closing the border just because, as you said in English, prevention is better than cure. Ebola virus is this disease. Worldwide, we do not have any antidote, any cure. And we have our most important and mightiest neighbor, which is Nigeria, where Ebola is there. The best way to address this issue, given the fact that there is no medicine to curb this disease, the best way to address it is to close the border. But this will not last forever. And as you know, we didn't do it purposefully. We didn't do it wholeheartedly. We did it just because there is no any other alternative, given the fact that there is no treatment to address it. So we close it, and I think that we hope that it must not last for more than 2 to 3 weeks.
Well, some people are expressing concern that Cameroon's decision to close all of its borders to Nigeria could have a diplomatic implication because Cameroon took an arbitrary decision without consulting with your neighbors, Nigeria. What do you say to that?
I think that Abuja cannot blame Cameroon for taking the necessary precautions to protect the health and the life of our people. Abuja cannot do this. This is the reading and the comment of journalists. So I think that this information is the once it falls in the ears of people of a broadly country, they will understand Cameroon. We didn't do it. You know that our most important, the first economic partner is Nigeria. Is Nigeria. The kind of trouble and harm it can cause to our nation, you cannot imagine, you cannot value it. We have to place the health and the life of people above everything. That's the reason why the government found itself in the need to do it.
Don't you think closing all your borders with Nigeria could also impact on Cameroon's economy based on the trade relations and the movement of people back and forth?
Yes, indeed, we know it in full knowledge of the consequences and inconvenience that this measure will cause to Cameroon. But we have no choice. If you have just one person who is infected, You may imagine the consequence which may occur. The reason why we pray Almighty to protect us from being contaminated by this most deadly disease to date. We didn't do it to harm our relationship with Nigeria. We didn't do it to harm to jeopardize the diplomatic relation with Nigeria. But I am convinced that the comment that you are making, you journalists, is not the one that is crossing the mind of politicians and leaders in Nigeria. They know exactly the problem we are confronted with.
Issa Chiroma is Cameroon's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaoundé. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 21st, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. While the Ebola epidemic continues to claim lives in West Africa, information technology specialists, together with radio and TV reporters, are battling misinformation and prejudice about the disease, using social media to educate the public about the deadly virus. VOA's Josh Putish has more.
The World Health Organization says the current Ebola outbreak is the worst in history and will probably continue to spread for months through Western and Central Africa. Most of the cases have occurred in remote villages, where people rely mostly on radio and television for the news. In Ghana's capital, Accra, an announcer for the city 97.3 FM station reads the daily bulletin.
The deadly Ebola virus resurfaced in West Africa in February this year. Since then, it has claimed more than 700 lives.
The station's online manager, Mawuli Tsikata, says the government's campaign to raise awareness about HIV/AIDS was much more aggressive than education about Ebola.
In the case of Ebola, you don't see anything. You just depend on what the journalists report to the public. So I don't think the government is doing enough to educate the public about Ebola.
The epidemic has also reached large cities, where a more affluent population has access to computers, the internet, and social media. Blogger Jafet Omojua, based in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, says social media users are often some of the most influential people in the society, so reaching them can help spread the word about the danger of Ebola.
They have access to those that are not on social media. So if they are interested, if they are made to know and understand the dangers and the risk of us not stopping Ebola from being a Nigerian issue, then they will likely get to reach their parents, their sisters, their cousins, their relatives.
Social media activism against the Ebola outbreak is not confined to individual bloggers. The Nigerian group Hexavia Logistics hopes its tweets are reaching many, not only in Nigeria, but other African countries as well. General Manager Babajide Fadoju says it is unfortunate that it took an epidemic for the African public to start talking about Ebola.
So the most important aspect of all things that we do is actually talking about it. Hence, talking about Ebola is actually one of the best things that has actually happened with the Ebola virus.
The World Health Organization says it will work with affected countries and their neighbors, renewing efforts to improve communication and teach people how to avoid infection and where to seek help. African bloggers and tweeters are already doing their part. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
The governments of Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Uganda, and Yemen on Wednesday called on the international community to meaningfully support the capacity of the Somali government to create peace in the country in order to allow the return of Somali refugees. The regional countries are host to about 1 million Somali refugees. They made their call during an international conference in Addis Ababa on Somali refugees organized by the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. Somalia Interior and Federal Affairs Minister Abdullahi Goda Barry says the conference also called on Somalia to restore stability and the necessary economic conditions for the return of the refugees.
This conference was seeking a commitment from asylum hosting countries, countries of Kenya, Uganda, Eritrea, Djibouti, and Yemen, who host the highest number of refugees from Somalia. and it was seeking a commitment that they will continue supporting according to the international standards for refugees. And the good news is that all the countries really reiterated their commitment and their support to the Somali refugees.
So what have these countries agreed to?
All of them, they agreed to continue supporting the refugees that they're hosting from Somalia. And also they made some presentations that they not only support them, but they are sharing with their limited resources to the refugees. And Somalia is grateful for these countries for what they're doing for the refugees.
So you are saying all of these countries have agreed not to forcefully repatriate Somali refugees back into Somalia?
Indeed, that's the case. They all promised that it will not forcefully return these asylum seekers, but also they are committed to help Somalia to create conditions for returnees to return. Actually, the experience tells us when the conditions are right in Somalia, that the high number will return voluntarily, sometimes even without support. So it was a successful conference, and Somalia is very grateful for the participants of the conference.
Somali Interior and Federal Affairs Minister Abdullahi Goda Bari was speaking with Harun Maruf of VOA Somalia Service. A quarter of Kenya's population are farmers. Few of these 10 million have ever received training on how to improve their production or how to expand their businesses with financing. Most of these farmers shun the idea of loan after seeing neighbors lose livestock or whole farms when they can't keep up with repayments of their loans. But now, a new company is offering cash for conservation measures in the hope that the so-called green loans will help farmers with better borrowing terms while teaching them how to protect Kenya's most fertile soils and ensure that the country can keep feeding itself. Hannah McNeish reports. Okay.
56-year-old Samuel Karaoke has been farming since he left school, harvesting the same vegetable crop each season. But this year, Karaoke's neat rows of cabbages are bursting into one another, and he is expecting a bumper crop of potatoes. After years of struggle, his success is thanks to a $90 loan that he used to buy top-quality seeds and fertilizer for the first time.
Oh, that is kwedia.
We've had a lot of problems, he says, noting a lack of finances, then a lack of market, and then infestations of bugs and diseases. He says he never wanted to take a loan before because there's always so much collateral. Karaoke has seen farmers in this mountainous region a couple of hours outside Kenya's capital, Nairobi, lose everything to loan sharks after failing to keep up with repayments. But his experience was different because of a new microfinance company called F3 Life. It offers small cash loans starting from as little as $20 to as high as $180, depending on repayments and the completion of basic conservation practices. The scheme, designed by Zimbabwe-born conservationist Mark Ellis-Jones, includes free monthly training in farming aimed at boosting productivity.
And we also provide a loan where we peg the interest rates to the quality of soil conservation that a farmer is practicing. We ask farmers to build grass strips across the contour of their slopes, which prevents the loss of topsoil from their farms.
As the loans increase, farmers are asked to plant trees to increase the protection of fertile topsoils otherwise washed away. F3 Life says that such simple measures can extend the soil life from about 20 years to 1,000 years. In this area, where vast patches of brown dot the once verdant hillsides, the soils might only last another decade. Continuing land degradation could pose serious problems for a growing country's ability to feed its inhabitants. Over the past 50 years, the world has lost one-third of its arable soils. F3 Life agronomist Ngigi Obadiah hopes to roll the Green Loans pilot scheme out nationwide to try to save Kenya's soils as the population booms.
At the moment, we are servicing 52 clients. We are anticipating to increase the number to 350 in 1 year's time. In 2 years' time, we anticipate to have 10,000 and about 500,000 within the next 5 years.
Samuel Karaoke says that his cabbages are the talk of the town, and many farmers are already sold on the idea of green loans that can help the entire community. As profits grow higher than the tall grasses protecting his plot, he plans on buying a pickup truck to cut out the middlemen, making a small fortune selling farmers' produce at a market that will soon be in their reach. Hannah McNeish for VOA in the Aberdares, Kenya.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the Olympic Youth Games in Nanjing, China. Egypt's Issa Saif claimed Africa's second medal at the Games on Wednesday. He bagged a bronze medal in the boys' 73-kilogram contest in taekwondo. Meanwhile, Kenya lost 12-0 to Fiji in the bronze medal playoff in boys' 7-a-side rugby. In boys' 3-on-3 basketball, Tunisia outclassed Guatemala 19-2. Earlier on, New Zealand beat Tunisia 15-3. In the girls' contest, Romania edged Egypt 13-11. Elsewhere, South Africa edged Bangladesh 4-3 as Pakistan thrashed Zambia 9-2 in boys' 5-a-side hockey, while Germany beat Zambia 5-2 in the girls' contest. In football news, the Nigerian Falconets thrashed North Korea 6-2 in semifinal action at the FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup in Moncton, Canada on Wednesday. Midfielder Asisat Oshoala stood out for scoring 4 of Nigeria's 6 goals. In Rwanda, Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority beat South Sudan's Atlabara 3-1 in quarterfinal action at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's Sekafa Kagame Club Championships in Kigali on Wednesday. Earlier on, following a scoreless stalemate in open play, Sudan's El Merrekh pipped Tanzania mainland's Azam 4-3 in a post-match penalty shootout. Kampala City Council, El Merrekh, and Rwanda's police and military side APR are through to the semifinals. Turning to athletics, the IAAF Diamond League continues as the world's elite athletes converge in Stockholm, Sweden for action today, Thursday. Finally, with the withdrawal of Argentina, Kenya and the United States of America are the only countries left in the bid to stage the 2017 IAAF World Youth Athletics Championships. The IAAF will name the successful bid on the 25th of September. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's a listener mail for this Thursday morning, August 21st.
I call on the National Assembly as a matter of urgency to pass the National Conference report in Nigeria into law as a new constitution. The issue of referendum should be ruled out because it is a waste of time, waste of money, and waste of energy for us, Nigeria. Comrade Mazi Patrick Okorokra for Owo Blue Premises at an Anosuku in Abia State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Ebola epidemic gripping West Africa has claimed another 106 lives, raising the overall death toll to 1,350. That's it for this Thursday, August 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a peaceful and healthy Thursday.
From Washington, this is VOA.
You want to listen to the latest African music? Dance to the best African beat from across the African continent? Then you don't have a problem. Just tune in to the African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays at exactly 0900 and 2000 Universal Time. African Beat, the show that brings happiness into your homes, smiles on your faces. So join me, your host, David Vandy, Monday through Friday, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time on The Voice of America.
Indian beats.
It's the best. It's number one.
We love it.